Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right. This is the show you've all been waiting for. It's a special Monday edition of the Weekly Worldview. Yes, that I'm trying new intros. That was my melodious intro. And since I exchanged so many blog posts with so many enemies this week and last, going into the election, over the issue of personhood mostly, I figured I would welcome them all to the show because at the end of all my blog posts, I started inserting my website, hoping to lure some of the heathens into the show. Have them come and check me after I insulted them and then destroyed their arguments and caused them to be embarrassed in front of God and everyone on the internet. I figured some may tune in, so hopefully you're out there. I apologize to our regular listeners. Technical difficulties yesterday. We contacted our internet service provider, which of course is key to the podcast. And they informed us that the internet was not expected to come back on in our neighborhood until the temperature dropped below 20 degrees. And so, lo and behold, this evening, everything is back to normal here in Colorado. Welcome to everyone. I hope you missed us last night. I hope you've been waiting. We're so happy to have you back on board. I want to open up with our deep, heartfelt thanks to God for the release of Kenneth Bay and Matt Miller from North Korea. Huge news. It's wonderful. I saw Kenneth Bay. I haven't heard an interview yet, but I got to see his smiling face as he got off an airplane free from North Korea, and just thankful to God for that, but also concerned and waiting to find out what exactly was the payoff that James Clapper made to the North Korean regime. Because you know there was a payoff. Because that's the way things are done these days. It's almost as if it's 1777 again, and everyone's paying off the Muslim pirates. The Islamic State has done very well with kidnappings for ransom, as well as other pirates off the coast of various African nations. And now the North Koreans, I believe there was a payoff. And one thing I can assure you is that the devil never forgets the deal that you made with him. So James Clapper and Barry Ho will be called to account for whatever deal they made for Kenneth Bay. And I'm glad he's free. I'm very concerned in the methodology of our government in that I don't trust them. I believe they negotiate not in good faith and certainly not with the best interests of our national security at heart. But hey, welcome home, Kenneth Bay. Welcome home, Matt Miller. They'll have a great testimony. That's for sure. Another note on the election. Chaplain Klingenschmidt, he was a former Navy chaplain. He's been officially demoted. That's right. He won his race for state rep here in Colorado, and he's been elected to the state house. So he's officially been demoted from Navy chaplain to legislator. And I think maybe that's good news. Anyway, Chaps wanted to do it, so Chaps did it, and hey, he got elected. So congratulations to Chaplain Klingenschmidt. And we may have some more things on the election a little later. Maybe. Maybe not. But maybe. Now, I'm going to touch on my five-year-old problem a little later in the show. But before that, I want to talk about my encounter with my new neighbor down the street yesterday. Some neighbors have been moving into the house down the street. My daughters and I were driving home, and we witnessed a man, who we assumed to be one of our new neighbors, being physically wrestled to the ground by a large floppy mattress. And we watched him for a few awkward seconds, and I pulled over, hopped out of the car, walked up the driveway, said, "Hey, you need a hand?" He says, "No." Waves me off, doesn't make eye contact, appears a little bit upset. And he continues to wrestle the mattress, and the mattress continues to win. And Finally, I just grabbed the back of the mattress, and I said, come on, man. And we slipped it right into the garage. And I realized in that moment that I had met my new neighbor under probably the worst circumstances under which two men can meet, in which one man is just obviously being defeated by the task at hand and failing miserably. And another man, a stranger, offers to help. And you're in the suburbs already. And so in the suburbs, there's this natural aversion to making eye contact with your neighbors. Have you noticed that about the suburbs? With the 6-foot fences and no, I don't, it's just the way it is. So anyway, so Chris was initially, his name was Chris. After that, we shook hands. He said, hey, my name's Chris. I said, I'm Doug, you know. Talked a little bit. I welcomed him to the neighborhood. We got along okay. Turns out he's from Boston originally. So I congratulated him. I congratulated him on the Patriots drubbing of the Broncos week before last. And he didn't know how to take that. And I said, no, seriously, congratulations. That was an impressive win. He's probably never met someone who lives in the Denver metro area who loathes the Broncos like we do here at the McBurney compound. Yeah, we loathe them. Yeah, okay. So anyway, it was just an odd meeting. And I'm wondering, I want to ask the advice of other men in the audience. Do you think it was appropriate for me to offer to help Chris when he was obviously going to be embarrassed that he needed help? He even said, no, I don't need help. He waves me off.
Wait, maybe he got mugged.
That could be. Maybe wherever he came from, he was worried I was going to stick a shiv in his ribs and take his wallet. I don't know. Maybe he thought I was going to rip off his mattress, strap it to the top of my car. Anyway, it was a fun time, and we just want to welcome Chris to the suburbs. Yeah, we made eye contact. Sorry, man. Okay, so that's pretty much all the housekeeping's out of the way. And now we move on. So we do have something from the election right off the top. I don't want to bore you people. I know a lot of people are really excited about the ascension of the Republican Party. And I think there were a few good candidates who won. I can't name any of them, but I think there were a few. There's a story here I downloaded from CNS News, a wonderful conservative news site. Maybe that's what CNS stands for, conservative news site. Conservative news service. Anyway, they're fantastic. The headline grabbed my attention. 100% of newly elected GOP senators campaigned on repealing Obamacare. That's right. 100% of them. And so this came from my Yeah Right file. people who read the news, and it surprises me sometimes because a lot of people are older than I am. And I wonder if they were awake in 1994, because that's my frame of reference. I first voted in 1988. 94, I was a part of the Republican Revolution. And then, I was sorely disappointed, as a matter of fact, by the Republican Revolution, and have been very disappointed by them ever since. And so some of my older friends, they send me these messages from news stories touting how this is a conservative wave and now there's hope for America. And I'm thinking, where have you people been? I mean, are we really better off than we were 20 years ago after the Republican Revolution? I'm talking to social conservatives out there. If you heathens are listening, well, you should be celebrating because you bastards win no matter what. I mean, look at us here in Colorado. What we ended up with was a senator. They're all listed here in this story from CNS News, and it starts with Senator Cory Gardner. What we got now in Colorado is the election of a senator who proves that you can abandon all of your core principles and even become an advocate for the other side and still get elected by the Republicans here in Colorado. So that's a sad precedent that's been set here in Colorado by Cory Gardner. You can lie, you can abandon your principles, you can speak out of two sides of your mouth, and you can still get elected in Colorado, and you can become an advocate for the other side, because Cory Gardner made a promise in his campaign that he would lobby to make certain types of oral contraceptives, as he calls them, oral contraceptives and birth control available over the counter. Now, my friend told me, well, I think that's probably just something he said in order to get elected. You know, his advisors told him that he needed to do something to mitigate the apparent war on women problem that Corey had. And so Corey just said that, and I said, well, I don't know. I said, the devil never forgets the deal that you made with him. And Corey made the deal, and Corey will have to, I believe he will follow through on it. I do. They list these senators here. Let's see if there's anyone here. Corey Gardner, David Perdue, never heard of him. Joni Ernst, eh. Tom Tillis, never heard of him. Tom Cotton, eh. James Lankford, never heard of him. Steve Daines, never heard of him. Mike Rounds, never. Shelley Moore, Capito, nope. They all ran on a platform of repealing Obamacare. Now, that's not quite true, CNS. They actually, like Cory Gardner, they say Cory Gardner, he campaigned on patient-centered care and a full repeal and replacement of President Obama's Affordable Care Act. Yeah, Cory Gardner. Now, he also, Cory Gardner now proves that not only can you abandon all your moral principles, lie outright to the people, deny reality, become an advocate for the other side, and offer your own version of Obamacare, which is what Cory Gardner will be a part of. I can assure you the Republicans, what they're mostly interested in is making sure that their donors and their constituencies are in charge of administering health, socialized health care. They're not interested in repealing and getting rid of Obamacare and allowing the market to work. That's not what they're all about. They're about replacing Obamacare with something that, well, profits them and their families and their nephews and nieces and mistresses and donors. It's a sad fact, but that's where we are in the body politic here in America. And we'll watch it happen over the next 2 years, and then you people can tell me whether or not I was right or wrong, and I will be proven right. Because there's one thing you can always count on, and that is the vacuity of the Republican Party, willing to morph themselves into anything to gain power, and then their job becomes consolidating power, accumulating wealth, and lording it over their neighbors. That's what the Republicans are good at. And I'll admit the Democrats are better at it than them, and even more vicious. But what's sad is that supposedly this is our side, folks. If you're a conservative like I am, these are our guys. And they're just 2 or 3 degrees to the right of the Democrats. So it's just sad. So that's my analysis of the election. I had a bunch of notes on the election, or I started putting them together, and then I realized I really don't care. It's really not worth commenting on. It's a hopeless situation. National elections, statewide elections. I've lost any hope in any kind of democratic solution. So I prefer to look at events on the ground. In fact, let's go to the ground. Let's go to Palmdale, California, from CBS out in Los Angeles. There was a man fatally shot last Thursday inside a McDonald's at lunchtime in broad daylight in Palmdale, California. He has been identified as gangsta rapper Big Payback. I know, it's kind of ironic. Big Payback, eating a Big Mac, sitting at McDonald's, and he gets shot and killed in broad daylight. Now, this is what I found interesting. His real name is Habib Amir Zakaj. So he sounds like he just left the Islamic State Army and moved to L.A. and started a rap career. Odd. What's the deal with the Muslim names with the rappers? I just don't know because I'm not familiar with that whole hip-hop lifestyle. But maybe someone can. Yeah, I talked last week. Last month. I talked about Wiz Khalifa. What's up with that, Wiz, you moron? Anyway, back to the story. Officials in Palmdale say the shooting was not random. No. In fact, it may have been a payback. Now, Big Payback's grief-stricken girlfriend was interviewed by police, and Police report that she said she's having trouble processing how her boyfriend was murdered. Even after police explained to her, he's a rapper named Big Payback. Oh, does that help at all? She still had no idea. She was devastated. The two had planned to move in together. And sadly, gangsta rapper Big Payback leaves behind three children.
What?
And no wives. And that's the closest thing we have to hip-hop here in the bowels of the McBurney compound. That's Big Payback might be listening to that song right now on that long escalator to hell. I mean, just giving him the benefit of the doubt. So, there you have it. Now, not to be outdone by Palmdale, let's go to Sylmar, again from CBS in Los Angeles, where I believe they have a shooting bureau. They have a bureau of local shootings so that every day they can sort out the 30 or 40 shootings that happen in the greater Los Angeles area and report on the ones that are the most shocking or ironic or, in the case of Big Payback, just the most public. And so we go now to Sylmar, where, according to the Sylmar Police Department, the girlfriend of Francisco Garcia threw a party last Saturday evening at her home to celebrate his return from Afghanistan. He's a returning soldier. Well, at about 2 a.m., veteran of the Afghanistan war, veteran of the war on terror, Francisco Garcia was standing on the sidewalk when two cars stopped and a man started shooting at Garcia. Garcia, veteran of the war on terror, was shot and died at the scene. The police say it appears Francisco was the target of the attack. Apparently, a simmering dispute had boiled over. And Garcia had been discharged from Afghanistan about 2 weeks ago and was shot dead in the suburbs of Los Angeles. In the war, well, we don't have a war on terror here. At least not officially. The Islamists have yet to crash the border and come and execute violence in mass casualty situations on us here in America. But we are doing it ourselves. Our own fellow citizens are murdering their fellow citizens at a rate much higher than the Islamists could ever hope to do. And it's a sad and dark, ironic lesson that we all learn from the death of Francisco Garcia. Survived Afghanistan, could not survive a party in Sylmar, California, because of the epidemic of violent crime that, for some reason, we've been convinced to tolerate by the proctocracy, and that's the lawyers that run everything, at least ostensibly. They think they run everything. But you know what? I try not to get depressed because I realize in my daily life that they don't run everything. They don't run me. I have liberty in my own house to raise my own children and to worship my God and to network with friends of like mind. I can travel freely to visit them. I can even protest. And so I don't get depressed and I don't get down. But I am saddened at the state of what passes for a civilization. I had a friend on Facebook who posted a question. I'm pro-life because, and then he had an underline, a blank, fill in the blank. And I typed in, because being against killing children is the basic requirement for participation in a civilized society. That's all. It's just the base. I mean, you're against killing kids? Okay. It doesn't make you a hero. Doesn't make you even a very good person. But at least you meet one of the fundamental requirements to be considered a civilized human being. Anyway, let's see. Reason number 836 we get from Breitbart: to keep or get your children out of the godless government schools. A Marine, oh, by the way, happy birthday to the United States Marine Corps, 239 years. And she looks fabulous for her age. A happy birthday to all the Marines out there, yes. A Marine in Maryland who fought against Islamic extremists overseas has been barred from the premises of his daughter's school because he protested her learning about the benefits of Islam at her Maryland high school. So this hapless Marine father, he's shocked and upset that his daughter is taking a class that speaks kindly about the religion of Islam. So the hapless dad, now he is a hero and a Marine, but I've got to say, he's a moron. He asked that she be excused from the class while the subject of Islam was discussed. Well, the school refused. They said, no, she must wear the ribbon. She's got to take the class. She has to wear the ribbon. Well, he got into an argument with school officials, so the school issued a no trespassing order against him to be enforced by the police by force of arms, if necessary, against this Marine father. He says that, in his opinion, he says that if Islam is going to be taught, current events should be part of the lesson. Okay, so listen, Dad, I mean, I appreciate your service. You're a Marine, and we all know you're a great hero, but you're making a very foolish decision in sending your child into a place that is outright anti-Christ, anti-God, anti-American, and then you're shocked when you find out that they're preaching to her about Islam? I mean, Dad, you should take your daughter out of the school. Forget about giving a fair and balanced approach to Islam. I don't want my daughters learning about that Islam is good and has benefits because it's a pagan religion that sentences its worshipers to an eternity apart from God. And I don't want my daughters even meddling with that. I don't want them even experimenting or I don't want them processing the data of false religions. It's dangerous. So, Dad, get your kid out of the school, and all you people out there, get your kids out of the school. Oh, and by the way, this comes on the heels of another story out in Manhattan Beach, a middle school boy. There was a class where the school was actually teaching the tenets of Islam, and the kid had to write the kid was required to write a sentence: "The one true God is Allah, and all people must submit to Allah." So, well, the parents, they went in and talked to the principal. The principal said he couldn't change the curriculum. So these parents in Manhattan Beach took their kid out of the school. They said, "We're done. We're out of here." And this dad, he wasn't even a Marine. He wasn't even a hero. But he took his kid out of the... So who's the hero? I think it's the Manhattan Beach dad who got his son out of the public schools. Manhattan Beach, yeah. But the Marine, he could be a hero if he'll get his daughter out before they expose her to any more... Oh, danger. Now, speaking of Islam, do you people remember Mount Sinjar and the Yazidis? Of course you don't. Well, maybe vaguely you're starting to think, oh, yeah, I heard something about the Yazidi Mount Sinjar. Well, here's the thing. The Islamic State rose to fame partially by trapping tens of thousands of Yazidis on a mountain, Mount Sinjar. Remember that back in August? Well, if you remember, Barry Ho announced, well, we're going to go in and we're going to do airstrikes. We're going to degrade, and we are going to... What? Degrade is not enough? Okay. We're going to degrade and defeat ISIL. ISIL, he calls, by the way, ISIL. Now, do you people notice that? I'm going to get back to this. Well, let me finish this on Mount Sinjar. because there's still about 1,000 Yazidi families, somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 people, still to this day trapped on Mount Sinjar by the Islamic State. More than 1,000 Yazidi families still trapped on Mount Sinjar. They're attacked daily by the Islamic State. Three Christian families are reported to have been captured by the Islamic State and forced to convert to Islam or have their heads cut off. But what happened here in America is that Barry came out and said, well, we're going to solve this problem. We're going to drop eight. We're going to, we're going to degrade, and I want you to be patient with the degradation, and then we will defeat ISIL. And everyone forgot about it. But to this day, there's nearly 5,000 people still trapped on that mountain. And Barry struts around the golf course as if he's already won the war. It's disgusting. Now, I want to get back to this point about ISIL, because this has struck me as odd, that everybody calls the Islamic State ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. It has a ring to it. It's easy to print. Everybody remembers it. It becomes a mnemonic in the news business, right? These things are common. And what cultures typically do is they coalesce around one acronym, right? But for some reason, the executive branch has refused to use the terms Islamic State, and they have refused to use the term ISIS. And now I've figured out why. I did a little research. The executive branch, Barry Ho and the Barry and Kerry show, they use the term ISIL, which is what the terrorists called themselves when they first started out, the Islamic State in the Levant. Well, does anybody know what the Levant is? Of course, nobody knows what the Levant is, but I'm going to tell you what the Levant is. The Levant is the territory that the caliphate has declared that it shall rule. And it is part of Syria and part of Iraq, and it's basically the land that they occupy to some degree right now. But it's their term. They call it the Levant. And so Barry is basically acknowledging their authority over that land by calling them the Islamic State in the Levant, calling them ISIL. And it's very offensive to me. Am I being too nitpicky, maybe? Maybe. But I have always suspected that Barry's allegiances do not lie within America, that he has other allegiances outside of our borders. And this is just another piece of evidence in the case I make that Barry is a sapper who got under the wire and somehow got elected. And he's sitting there in the middle of everyone with a bomb. Maybe I shouldn't say that. You think the Secret Service would come? A rhetorical bomb, a societal bomb, a political bomb. There, hopefully that'll keep the Secret Service off my back. But it does bother me. All right, now, one more piece of evidence. Well, maybe this doesn't point to Barry's allegiances, but maybe it does. Because when the war in Syria was going badly, and Assad was, well, badly, I don't know how to define badly, actually, because it'd be great to see Assad get blown up. Be great to see his regime, his terrorist regime, destroyed. But then the people who want to destroy it, they want to export the Islamic State into a caliphate eventually around the whole world. So anyway, when the war in Syria started to get very, very hot, and the Assad regime appeared to be on the verge of defeating its enemies, well, Barry and John McCain and some other hapless morons decided that it was time to arm the, what did they call them? Yes, the moderate Syrian rebels. And we started doing that, I don't know, a year ago, 2 years ago. We've been sending them bullets and guns and anti-tank weapons for quite some time now. And at the time, I remember saying that, no, you shouldn't do that, boys. Toppling a state and conquering a nation is something you have to do yourself. If you farm that out, you're going to get yourself into trouble. And sure enough, this past week, Syrian rebels, according to Breitbart, that were trained and armed by the United States have defected to Al-Qaeda in Syria, and they have surrendered their weapons, including heavy arms, Grad rockets, and TOW anti-tank missiles, to the non-moderate forces, Syrian forces. The Hazem group surrendered their weapons and supplies to the Al-Nusra Front and basically joined up with them. Josh Earnest said the U.S. effort to build up a capable Syrian fighting force is, well, it's not a short-term proposition, said Josh. It's going to require a sustained effort. A sustained effort of supplying weapons. But which side will the people who get the weapons end up fighting for, Josh? I mean, are you people serious? They are serious. And I believe there's no way that the executive branch and the Republican, I don't know what to call them. I guess I'll just call them Republican. John McCain and his ilk, who teamed up with Obama to basically arm radical Muslim terrorists because they didn't have the stones to tell the American people that we're going to have to go do it. That's right. We have to go into the Middle East so that there isn't an Islamic State and it's not exported to Virginia and Southern California, New Mexico, and Colorado. That's what the Islamists want. But they didn't have the guts to do that because they're all cowards. And yet, John McCain, probably just a well-meaning, hapless, doddering, semi-Alzheimer's type, you know. But Barry Ho, quite possibly, actually aligned, well, maybe even with the Al-Nusra Front itself. View. I'm Doug McBurney. Glad to have you back. I want to finish off on this news from the Islamic State. The original Islamic State, Iran. Got a story here from the Wall Street Journal out of the War File. Reports are that President Obama secretly wrote a letter to Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei in the middle of last month and described to the Ayatollah a shared interest in destroying America. In fighting the Islamic State. I apologize. Sometimes I write my own notes in. It's weird. Now I know. So I said maybe Barry's aligned with the Al-Nusra Front or the Islamic State. Well, they're Sunni, right? Sunni. And Iran, they're Shia. And so this is evidence to me that Barry is willing to make a deal with either side, both sides. And he's not playing both sides against the middle. He's playing both sides. He's building up both sides against us. And I mean the whole West, not just America. But Iran is the original Islamic State. It's actually an Islamic State. Iran doesn't just call itself the Islamic State. It is the Islamic State. They call themselves the Islamic Republic of Iran. So he wrote a secret letter to talk about the Islamic State. He stressed that cooperation on the Islamic State would be contingent on a nuclear deal, indicating that he's willing to deal. Hey, let's make a deal. So according to this Wall Street Journal report, this is the fourth time Obama has written a letter to Iran since 2009. In which he has pledged to engage with Tehran's Islamist government over the nuclear issue. Mr. Obama, according to the Wall Street Journal, apparently views Iran as important. and in his letter, Mr. Obama made clear to the Iranians that the U.S.'s military operations inside Syria are not targeting Iran. Iran's ally, Mr. Assad. And in any way, that's not what this is all about. Or Assad's forces. We're not. No, that's not what we mean to do. Well, I don't know how to read all this. It's very confusing that our president is writing secret letters to our sworn deadly enemies. I mean, I think Barry should be arrested and frog marched out of the White House with a raincoat over his head, as far as this guy has gone. It's unbelievable. John Kerry, though, don't worry. John Kerry is set to begin intensive direct negotiations on the nuclear issue with my Iranian counterpart to solve this problem. A senior administration official said negotiations could extend beyond the deadline. Not, we're going to miss that deadline. Remember, we set a deadline with the Iranians? Yeah. Negotiations may, we may not make that deadline. It might not work out. U.S. officials say they're not coordinating with Tehran on the fight against the Islamic State, but, and that's a big but, big old but right there, U.S. diplomats are passing messages behind the scene through the Abadi government in Baghdad and through the offices of Iraq's Grand Ayatollah, not just Ayatollah, no. This is the Grand Ayatollah, Ali al-Sistani. You know, it's as if Barry set out to set up the West, to set us all up, into a weak defensive position right between a maniacal Sunni army and a nuclear Shia Iran, right between the Islamic State and Iran. And it shocks me because years ago, I remember when the invasion of Afghanistan took place. And then a few years later, the invasion of Iraq. And I thought, well, George W. Bush might be the stupidest man who ever occupied the White House, but perhaps he'll end up giving us a base in Afghanistan and a base in Iraq, and we'll basically have Iran surrounded and we can solve the problem. Well, Barry has taken any possibility of that and well, turned it upside down and backwards and pointed it against us. We end up in right between the Islamic State maniacs and headcutters and a nuclear Iran. And meanwhile, we're likely crawling with enemies within, people who are either outright supporters or at least sympathetic to the Islamic worldview. And this is probably going to be Barry's legacy. And nobody may recognize it right now. It may not be obvious to everyone right now, but I think we've been set up, frankly. I just can't see any other reason that things could go this badly in foreign affairs. I can't imagine unless it was deliberate. I mean, the government rarely gets what it intends to do done deliberately, at least not all of it. And this is just messy enough to make me believe that this was their plan, or at least his plan, deep down in his dark little heart. All right. Meanwhile, the Times of Israel is reporting that Iran, under the current negotiated agreement, has stepped up efforts that could enrich uranium much quicker, at a much quicker pace, in fact violating the interim agreement under which they are operating that they made with world powers, the Barry and Kerry show. You remember that last year. Well, the Institute for Science and International Security says under the interim deal, an advanced centrifuge that Iran possesses should not have been fed with uranium gas. But in fact, ISIS reports it has been fed by uranium gas. ISIS, oh, I'm sorry, it's not the ISIS in Syria and Iraq. This is the Institute for Science and International Security. That's unfortunate for them, huh? Their acronym has been ISIS for many years, and now they're probably going to have to work on rebranding that. But they do report, seriously, that the Iranians have fed an advanced centrifuge with uranium gas in outright violation of the Barry and Kerry show deal. What are the Barry and Kerry show going to do? Nothing. They're going to negotiate with Iran in hopes that they can help us with the Islamic State, the other Islamic State. Now, how could you think negotiating with one Islamic State for help against another Islamic State makes any sense? Unless you're either insane or, in fact, an agent of the enemy, which he could very well be. Iran, according to the Times of Israel, has also reportedly sped up its low-grade uranium enrichment over the past 2 months. The State Department, let's see if they had any comments. State Department spokeswoman Jen Psaki, State Department spokeswoman Jen Psaki had no comment on the new information and asked reporters if they'd seen her purple and yellow Dora the Explorer book bag at the bus stop before the press conference. And apparently they were still looking for that as we went to air. Now, we move to, I didn't have this labeled properly, reason number 830-something here, 837, to get or keep your kids out of the government school. A senior at Radnor, Pennsylvania High School was arrested last week after she wrote a detailed plan to murder her classmates and a teacher. This is a 17-year-old, wrote a detailed plan in her notebook, said she wanted to be the first female mass murderer. She wrote about how much she admired Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. The girl has a history of mental illness, and she's currently undergoing psychiatric evaluation. The superintendent of the school says there were signs. He said if you want to go back to Columbine, there were numerous warning signs that were ignored, and we're not going to do that. We're going to the girl was arrested and is undergoing psychiatric evaluation, and a terror plot was apparently foiled at Radnor High School in Radnor, Pennsylvania. We're thankful for that. But reason number 837, yes, your child may be shot at or shot and killed by fellow students. I know that it keeps coming up, but I think each time it does, it deserves its place on the list. Meanwhile, wow. So this girl in the public school, she's undergoing psychiatric evaluation. I wonder if the psychiatrists have in their toolkit the ability to help a young person understand the value of human life. I wonder if the psychiatrists have that in their toolkit. I mean, besides your own life. We all know that everybody cares about their own life, but the life of other people. I doubt the psychiatrists have the proper tools to help this girl. Because she's been forged in an education cauldron that teaches children that, that they basically evolved from, if you go back far enough, from nothing into some sort of primordial ooze, and then into a bacteria, and then a fish, and then a bird, and then a mammal, and then eventually you became whatever you are now, which is whatever you decide you want to be, and maybe it's human, maybe it's a person. Maybe life means something, but maybe it doesn't. It's really all up to you. Basically what the government schools teach. But you should have a lot of self-esteem. A lot of self-esteem. Anyway, so I doubt they can help her. Look at what's happening in our country. From CNN, they report that the body of 6-year-old Lincoln McCabe was found in the frigid waters of Oregon's Yakina Bay Monday evening. His mother called 911 to say that she had thrown him from the bridge over Yakina Bay. Bridge, yeah. She threw her 6-year-old child off the bridge 100 feet down into the cold water and then called police to tell them that she had done it. Police have not commented on a possible motive, but I would refer you back to the education system into which people are feeding their children, where they're being taught that the value of life is a relative proposition. That's what they're being taught. And when they become adults, the mother's 34 years old. And this is the fruit of an education system that teaches people that they're animals. Police have not commented on a possible motive. But one thing we can definitely say is that the motive was not love.
When the children cry, let the lonely try. 'Cause when the children sing, then the new world begins.
Thanks for tuning in. I want to talk about my five-year-old problem. You may have, did I say it on this show? About my five-year-old daughter came home and, not came home, she was in our backyard. Heard from her five-year-old playmate that, my daddy says it's okay for two women to get married. And so I'm going to have to talk to this fella. Who's a sweet, sweet guy. Just the nicest guy on the block. So my plan is to accompany him back to his house the next time he drops off his five-year-old to play with mine. And I'm going to take the advice of my pastor, who said, look, Doug, don't confront him off the bat. Just say, hey, I'm worried about something that your daughter heard. And that's what I'm going to tell him. I'm worried about something your daughter heard. She told my five-year-old that it's okay for two women to get married. And then what happens after that is kind of based on his response. We'll see. But there's three things I'm going to make clear to him. I'm going to make clear that in the book of Mark, now he claims to be a Christian. This family goes to some kind of church, so I assume it's a Christian church. Well, I don't assume it's a Christian church. I assume it calls itself a Christian church and probably has a cross somewhere in its logo. But I'm going to make it clear that in the book of Mark, the 10th chapter, Jesus quoted Genesis, and he said, from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. And then we're going to share and discuss, me and this father, right up the street in my neighborhood. And then I'm going to remind him of what Paul said in Romans, the first chapter. Paul said, for this reason, exchanging the truth of God for a lie, God gave them up to vile passions. For even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another, men with men, committing what is shameful, and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error which was due. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting. Oh, I didn't. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses behind and up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism to diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to censor anyone who would ever even consider the possibility of quoting a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth has been and is about to be uttered. I will then remind this father what Jesus said in the book of Luke in the 17th chapter. Because now remember, folks, it's my daughter's little friend. She heard this from her father. And I'm going to be talking to her father. I'm going to remind this father that Jesus said in the book of Luke, he said to the disciples, it is impossible that no offense should come. But woe to him through whom they do come. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea than that he should offend one of these little ones. I'm going to. And so now This may be an uncomfortable conversation we have. He might even think ill of me. He might even hate me. Now, he might act like everything's just fine, and he loves me, in my opinion, too, because he's that nice of a guy. But I just want to let him know, well, where God stands, where the Christian church stands, and where I stand. And then we'll see what happens. I will report back to you. And if you have any other advice, please send me an email. I'd be happy to consider it. All right. Now, back into the culture file. Ellen Barkin. Are we familiar with her? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. Someone from the 80s? Yeah, that's about right. Well, she's still around, and she is a maniacal abortionist. And I don't mean she performs abortionists. I don't mean she performs abortions. But she's a full-throated abortion advocate. She tweeted, when did she tweet this? On November 1st, there was a discussion going on about when life begins. And Ellen Barkin, an actor from the 80s, actress from the 80s, said, here's what she tweeted. Newsflash, a fetus cannot talk. It is not a person. Not even a baby, not even an infant. Nope, sorry. So this is it's so eerie because my pastor, Bob Enyart, on his radio show 20 years ago warned that the tolerance for abortion and the tolerance from the pro-life industry for the regulation of abortion is going to lead to infanticide being legalized, because what we've done is we've taken the foundational protection of personhood out from under the unborn child who can't speak for themselves, can't defend themselves. They're the most weak and the most helpless among them, and we've taken out the one thing that protected them was the fact that society recognized them as having a right to life because they're people. And now Ellen Barkin is the full-grown, mature fruit of that, saying not even a baby, not even an infant is a person, she says. Later on in her Twitter feed, she says, by the way, I'm pro-life. Including a woman's. She's pro-life. So here's what I'm afraid of, folks. And I'm warning you now. We'll see where we are 20 years from now. If the pro-life movement, if the people who are ostensibly against abortion don't advocate for personhood, well, a generation from now, the people participating in abortion and committing abortion and advocating abortion will consider themselves pro-life. They'll consider themselves pro-life because there will be some instances in which they think abortion should be restricted. And that will be pro-life. It already is to a large extent amongst the leadership of the pro-life movement. They're all pro-aborts with exceptions, and they consider themselves pro-life. But I'm talking about the average run-of-the-mill person who considers themselves pro-life. Anyway, so there's my warning to all of you about what's coming if personhood is not advocated. If we don't pick a fight on this issue pretty soon and engage the enemy without fear, without apology, and as aggressively as possible, then we're going to lose probably the greatest battle against the greatest criminals in the history of mankind. I don't want to go down as the guy who lost that war. I mean, you think Hitler and Stalin were killers? They've got nothing on the abortionists. Nothing. They're not a pimple on the backside of the abortionists. Hundreds of millions have been legally murdered, and every single one of them innocent. Every single one. I don't want to be the guy who lost that war. So, I noticed that personhood won 6 counties in Colorado, and I've heard some talk in the movement about advancing our cause into cities and counties and initiatives and basically trying to set up giving people in towns and counties the opportunity to make their town recognize the personhood of the unborn child so that no abortion clinic can ever be built in our town because we have an ordinance that recognizes the unborn child. I'm telling you, it doesn't matter how small or insignificant that town seems. The day the abortionists hear that they've declared it an abortion-free zone by personhood, they will go to war with us. We will put a hook in their jaw, and we will drag them to the battlefield that we choose. And I like that, and I'm willing to participate because I don't want to lose this war. All right. Another story here from the Culture File. This is shocking, but it is not surprising. ABC Television continued a long tradition every year before Halloween. The television network plays It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. And at the very end, listen to what happened. This is according to the Parents Television Council. They're condemning ABC because The Great Pumpkin ended at 8:59 p.m. and mere seconds later, the camera switched to Olivia Pope having a very graphic dream from a television series called Scandal. So you know how a show ends and then the network immediately rolls a promo for one of its other shows. Well, they at ABC chose to run a very steamy sexual dream sequence from this scandal right there. And there was no way, no parent could have ever been fast enough on the remote to prevent their kids from seeing right there. So that's why we don't watch network television here at the McBurney compound. Can't watch sports. You can't watch the news. You can't watch network television. All you can watch is pre-recorded stuff for the kiddos because, yeah, you can't do it. My extremely attractive audio engineer, she'll watch the entire shows with commercials that she records, and if it's got some of them, she has to erase. Anyway, be careful, folks. Now, for this crime, whoever did this should be arrested and prosecuted to the full extent of the law. It's unbelievable. Someone would do. Remember what I said earlier about a millstone? This is what the millstone is for. These people right here who did this to all these kids. These vile, filthy sex maniacs is what they are. Who are out to defile and deflower your children and mine. That's what they want. That's what they live for. It's more important to them than money. It's more important to them than ratings. What they want is to defile the mind of your child. You know why? Because they're so miserable in their hatred of God and their rebellion that they find satisfaction in bringing others into it. They want others to be involved so that they are acknowledged in their wicked, vile, evil perversion. And what they want is your daughter and your son. This should be a crime punishable, in my opinion, after a fair trial, punishable by death. And I'll tell you what, their punishment will be death. If they don't repent of this, they will get death. One way or another, they will get death. If not in this world by the justice system, then in the next by the Almighty God, who created these children in His image, and He loves their innocence. He loves their relationship with Him, and He hates those who would defile them. He hates those who would defile them. Here's another one sent to me. It wasn't sent to me. It was posted by a friend of the show, Lynn in Alabama. Thank you. Tony the Tiger. Kellogg's Cereals has, they've joined with the Atlanta Gay Pride March. Yeah. And they sponsored the Pride March. Tony the Tiger wants to make sure you and your kids, said the ad, wear your stripes with pride. Gay pride. It was an ad in the Pride Guide, which is, I don't know, it's probably a magazine that advertises hookup sites around the march. I don't know what it is, but there's an ad with Tony the Tiger aimed at kids promoting homosexuality. Promoting rebellion against God, rebellion against your own sex. It's unbelievable. Kellogg says, we're an evolving culture that respects and accepts employees' sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression so that all employees can be authentic and fully engaged. So Kellogg's, they make all kinds of cereals. They have taken the mark of the beast. They think that this is the smart thing to do business-wise, and so they took the mark. They've bowed the knee. Kellogg's cereals, they received a 100% score from the Corporate Equality Index issued by Human Rights Campaign, which is a well-known homosexualist promotion organization. Disgusting. A Christian-owned baking company in Northern Ireland has been ordered to make homosexuals a gay-themed Sesame Street wedding cake with Bert and Ernie. This is disgusting. This is aimed at kids because this is what they want your kids. And now listen, this is what's so sad. Daniel MacArthur, who's the head of a Christian group who's going to try to fight this, he says that making the cake would amount to endorsing the campaign for same-sex marriage, and it would go against the baker's conscience. So he mentions the baker's conscience, but he's afraid to mention God. And if that doesn't change, then the war is already lost. If our leaders and the people who are on our side, who are going to speak for us, are afraid to mention God, then the war is lost. We've already lost. And I hope it hasn't gotten to that. All right, the rest of this I'll save for another show and another time. I want to thank you all for joining us on this special Monday night edition of the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. That's KGOV.com. Theology Online and AmericanRightToLife.com. And as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, not to mention my extreme attractive audio engineer. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.